Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now, the only night shift sports radio host who's now canceled our famous beer segment for a second week in a row, it's Jay Binkley.
Ah, Julio, you're not exactly right, because I'm doing a little beer segment down here with the fine people at Wedding Streaks and this great beer selection that they have down here. So don't worry, my friend. We're still talking tournament. We're talking Chiefs. We're talking Royals. And we're going to talk beer.
That's right. You're just rubbing it in right now is what you're doing, right?
That's right. That's right. Bacon Night live from Winning Streaks at Harris Casino. Great sports bar. Games on all over the place. One of the best beer selection you're going to see in the city. Recliners for everybody to sit in and relax and watch the games. We've got a ton of people from 610 Sports Radio here. My man Jacob's here. Ketz is here. Ben Albert's here. Steven Sirt is here. Hartzell, 96.5 The Buzz. Ryan Wachowski and the younger Ryan Wachowski. Or Jeremy, younger or older? Younger? Older. The older brother of one, Ryan Wachowski. So it's a great time down here. Don't forget the Madness Specials. Hangover Burger right here. Hangover Burger. You had too much to drink last night. How about this? Caramelized onions, bacon fried egg, queso cheese, choice of side. Fried chicken sandwich as well, and a bacon-wrapped jalapenos with one of the best beer selections you will find in the city. Winning Streaks at Harris. Not only that, we have a box here to register for Royals opening day tickets that we'll give out on Monday. And don't forget on Tuesday on Show and Vern, 34 tickets they're giving out, 17 pairs. So every 15 minutes, Steven Serta is going to be a busy man Tuesday on Show and Vern handing out Royals opening day tickets. And guess what? Royals making a move today. Guess who's back, Julio? Lucas Duda signed to a minor league contract that Ned Fields will end up on the 25 for some bench help. Will not deter Ryan O'Hearn and Hunter Dozier. Lucas Duda back, Julio.
You sound really excited about this move, Bank.
I'm not, but I like Lucas Duda. It's the veteran presence they needed. Duda's the man. All right? Maybe Duda's hot. Maybe people will trade for him this year instead of just getting cash or a box of baseballs like you got for him last year. We'll talk to Cody Tapp as he winds down in Surprise, Arizona. Game tonight, Saturday and Sunday for the Royals. That's it from Surprise, Arizona. Then the Royals against the Omaha Storm Chasers Monday. You can hear that game right here on 610 Sports Radio. Ned Yost going to use a host of relievers in that game. Last year it got called because of weather. And I was thinking about this today, Julio. You know, I-29 is closed off in certain parts. I hope people can still make it up there for that game. This flood is just crazy in northwest Missouri and down here around Parkville area and everything else is that river, Missouri River, starting to crest. But the big news today, the tournament rolls on, and come down here to Winning Streaks and watch the tournament. Kansas State goes down. And we'll talk to John Kurtz. He's the program director of K-Man in Manhattan, Kansas. He's in San Jose. He was in the locker room talking to the gentleman. Kansas State goes down today to the Anteaters of UC Irvine. Their first tournament win. Second tournament game. Back in 15, they lost by 2 points to Louisville. So the Anteaters beat Kansas State today in what was a sloppy game from the Kansas State Wildcats. And keep in mind, they were going to this tournament without Dean Wade. They didn't have Dean Wade, but just for a cup of coffee in last year's tournament to get the 4 points against Kentucky. Barry Brown was going to be the guy to carry Kansas State. He's a guy that, well, arguably consideration for Big 12 Player of the Year. Barry Brown only played 26 minutes, 5 total points, including a terrible turnover towards the end. Got himself in a little foul trouble early. Bruce Weber actually pulled him out of the game for a while, and this is a guy you have to have on the court if you're Kansas State, and I was listening to CDOT and Brandon earlier, and I agree with them. Dean Wade might have made the difference down low in this game for the Kansas State Wildcats. Here's Bruce Weber after the game about his decision to kind of pull Barry Brown.
For, you know, if we're winning, I'm going to leave them in, and we were winning. And I got close. Barry wanted to go in. He started running to the bench. I put Gardy in. We made a play. We were up three. We didn't make. They make the big shot at the end of the half. Obviously, that, you know, that's when it comes out to it. It's a big play to get going, get them some momentum going in at halftime. But I thought if anything, Dick Barry would be fresh coming in the second half because he's logged a lot of minutes over this season and over his career.
He never got in rhythm. He never got in rhythm. Ewing ended up pounding in, 18 points, or excuse me, what did Ewing have in this game? I think he had, Ewing ended up with 14. Kamau Stokes ended up with 18 points. Kind of a sloppy finish for the Kansas State Wildcats, and it brings me to this. You know, I heard people talking that Kansas State season is a success, because they stopped the streak of the Kansas Jayhawks, 14 straight Big 12 titles. I don't see how you can look at this as a success when you bow out in the first round to a 13th seed. Now, the Anteaters were better than that. This is a team that 31-5 record so far on the season. But Kansas State's a Power 5 conference co-champion with Texas Tech. You know, you look at the Big 12 and how they're doing, Baylor, with the win over Syracuse. You look down the line, Iowa State plays tonight against Ohio State. But what could the Big 12 show in the NCAA tournament? And it is not a good look. It is not a good look whatsoever when your co-champion, Kansas State, goes down in the first round. Now, Kansas was the team that had the question marks. Kansas was the team playing Northeastern. Although Northeastern, a very good shooting basketball team, KU wins by 35 points. KU sits on the doorstep of Kansas City for the elite, for the Sweet 16. A chance to go to the Final Four coming right back here to Sprint Center. It was going to be Kansas State making a run. Senior leadership. It's unfortunate what happened to them with Dean Wade, but they had the other guys on this team that stepped up last year. And I don't know how you can view it as a success. Yes, it's nice that you can look back and say this team was Big 12 champions, but when your team makes a run for the Elite Eight, you bring back all the talent that Kansas State had, and yet they bow out in the first round. Not a good look. We'll talk to John Kurtz, who's out in San Jose, in just a little bit. But I don't know where you come in and stand on this, Julio. But to me, I mean, take your Kansas glasses off for a minute.
That's
kind of
hard to
do. Is it a success because they won, were co-champions of the Big 12, or is it a disappointment that they lost to the 13th seed in the first round?
Yeah, I think it's still a successful season, I think. It's just a disappointing end. They could have done better. The bar was set high last year. Look, I mean, what can you expect? I don't know. A lot of people picked them to be upset anyways. So, like you said, it's not that big of a surprise. It's just disappointing, and I feel bad for K-State fans because I feel like they did deserve more, honestly.
Well, the other Big 12 teams, as we said, been doing well. Texas Tech wins today 72-57 over Northern Kentucky. Iowa State plays later tonight. Kansas will play Auburn tomorrow at 8:40, and I think that game takes on a whole new complexion. Auburn was a sexy pick, a team that a lot of people liked. I liked Auburn in the second round, but they did struggle. But when Auburn plays Kansas, is this Kansas team confident? Matt Tate reports Devin Dotson's ankle is going to be fine. That was a little bit of a scare for Kansas. He was the best player on the court for them yesterday. Will he be coming back and strong? But regardless, you're starting to get your upsets a little bit in the NCAA tournament, which makes this thing fun.
Let's not forget about Baylor and OU. I think the bars are set pretty low for both those teams. I don't think anyone expected much. And they both pulled off some pretty impressive victories.
No, they did. And how about Oregon beating Wisconsin 72-54? Oregon was a 12 seed. You know how weird that was watching that game, seeing Oregon as a 12 seed? That's usually reserved for the also-rans, the mid-majors, like Liberty. That's a 12 seed as well. Isn't it a little weird seeing an Oregon being like that?
It is. I think it was a little bit of payback, though, because I believe Wisconsin has knocked Oregon out the last two times from the tournament. So this is a little bit of payback for them.
Virginia had a scare in the first half against Gardner-Webb. They ended up pulling out 71-56. And I was thinking about that game. They're the first 16 or number one seed to lose to a 16 seed last year. And I was thinking about Tony Bennett. Like, if he would have got rolled again by a 16 seed, regardless of how good he is in the regular season, getting number one seeds, if he would have lost today, wouldn't you consider running that guy?
I would think so.
I mean, you've got to win in the NCAA tournament. Gardner-Webb gave them a scare in the first half in this game. What were they up by 10 points at one time, I do believe, weren't they? What was the high water mark for Gardner-Webb? They were up 24-14. They were up 26-14 at a time. Then 30-16 was where they were at as well. A 14-point lead they had over Virginia. It was 30-20 for quite a bit. And I sat there thinking to myself, man, can you imagine if they lose once again? 36-30 they were down at the first half. And I was like, wait a minute, this is 16 seed and a one seed. Tony Bennett. I mean, I know you keep getting there, but come
Monster.
On. What, well, we all got right, some scores?
We've got some scores. We've got to do our update as we do throughout the entirety of the tournament. Every 10 minutes, we get you an update on where we're at in the NCAA tournament. Looks like we have about 10 minutes left in the first half as Washington is down to Utah State 17-14. North Dakota State and Duke just tipped off. Next on the docket at 6:20 is Georgia State and Houston. Back to you, Bank.
There we go. Let's check in at San Jose, California. John Kurtz, how is the Kansas State locker room taking this loss? And what happened to Barry Brown today for the Kansas State Wildcats? We'll talk to somebody from Manhattan, Kansas, who was at that game in San Jose next. Welcome back to Bink Friday Night. We're sitting down here watching every game in the NCAA tournament right here at Winning Streaks at Harrah's Casino. But right now, it's time to show me the way to San Jose and talk to John Kurtz, Program Director, K-Man, in Manhattan. John, good. Well, it's 4:17 out there. How are we doing tonight?
Oh, you know, I've been better. That was a tough loss to absorb, but in all honesty, it's been a lot of fun following this team this year. And hey, they did accomplish a lot. There's a time to reflect on everything. Trying to do a little bit of that right now through some of the pain of that loss really stinging.
Talking Kansas State Wildcats with John Kurtz, who's at the game out in California today. And, John, I know that on your Twitter timeline, if people want to follow him, it's at J Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. And he's got a lot of great reaction from the Kansas State players, including talking to Dean Wade as well, who, of course, didn't play in this game. What was the locker room like for the co-Big 12 champions following the 13 seed today?
It's interesting. It wasn't as despondent as you might think. And don't get me wrong, there were tears. It was a sad locker room. NCAA tournament locker rooms are never easy to be in, but I have been in locker rooms that felt sadder, and I think more sad, I guess is probably the right grammatical way to say that, but I think some of it just feels like there is an element of everybody being at peace with this team doing what they did and winning the Big 12 and battling through Dean Wade's injury issues, Cam Stokes, everything that they had to do with how beat up they were at the end of the year and still finding a way to do that. I think because of that, it wasn't quite the scene that you would maybe expect at the end of the day. I would tell you that I think the main thing that came from players and Bruce Weber about what happened is just that they didn't make shots in the second half, and UC Irvine stepped up and made a lot of shots. There was no talk of, we overlooked this team. Bruce Weber pretty emphatically said that that's not at all what really happened. UC Irvine just made some plays, and K-State, with foul trouble and without Dean Wade, does become a somewhat limited team. So I think all of that stuff just unfortunately caught up to them.
Well, what was the Barry Brown? That's kind of been the talk around here. You know, the early fouls there in the first half, it looked like he got out of rhythm when Bruce Weber took him out of the game. You know, here's the guy that's supposed to carry the team, and he had 26 minutes in this ballgame, John.
That's definitely a sticking point after the game. And I can't sit here and tell you that I agree with the move to keep Barry Brown out the rest of the first half. If it were me, I would have played and trusted Barry Brown more. It was interesting that Bruce Weber did put Cartier Jada in with two fouls as opposed to Barry Brown, because you would think Barry Brown, a senior one, and just a guy that defends as well as he does without having to foul, would get some more trust in that regard. And I know some pointed out Barry Brown averages 2.4 fouls per game, or maybe even for 40 minutes. I can't remember which one that was for sure. But either way, I understand the criticism. And I think they lost the game because they couldn't parlay the momentum and the lead and the cushion that they had in the first half before, and the game all of a sudden was tied at halftime. So there is definitely some fault there. I also don't think Barry Brown was playing great basketball today, and I'm not sure that it had quite the impact that some people would like to make it out to be. But this is one of those recurring themes that's always been an issue with K-State fans. Bruce Weber is very old school in the manner that he deals with foul trouble. In general, if you have two fouls, you're not going to play the rest of the first half. There have been some exceptions like Jada today. That's just sort of the way Bruce Weber does it. It's a very old school, conservative way to handle it. I think it's conservative to a fault. But I'm also not going to say it was the single and sole reason that they lost the game, which it seems to be a lot of people making that to be the total scapegoat for what happened in the game.
John, you watch this team inside and out every game. You go on the road a lot of times with this team as well. How disappointed are you? Did you think this team would be able to make a run like last year, even though, you know, without the absence of Dean Wade except for that Kentucky game? Did you feel this team had a bit of a run in them, considering, you know, how much they fought in the Big 12 this year?
I really did. Earlier today, I was saying I felt like this team swayed me from going into the Big 12 tournament. I thought round of 32 without Dean Wade, and after seeing them play two pretty high-level basketball games, I was convinced in my mind, I think this team can get to the Sweet 16. And I thought the draw, I thought Oregon-Wisconsin is a pretty weak 5-12 there. So I thought if they could get past this game, they had a great chance to get to the Sweet 16. I was honestly more worried about this game than I was the potential game in the next round, which now turns out would be Oregon. But I can see how it all happened today. Some things just added up. They don't have a lot of margin for error if Wade is out to withstand foul trouble, not only just the one player, but the two. So a lot of things caught up to them, and I can certainly understand how it swung back the other way, the pendulum, that is, as far as them not being able to make a run. It's tough and it's frustrating, but I did. I thought this team, even without Dean Wade, with Cartier Jada back and the impactful player that he can be, that they had a chance to still make a run like they did last year.
Talk to John Kurtz, K-Man, Manhattan, Kansas, is in San Jose for the Wildcats. Lost today to the Anteaters of UC Irvine. And, John, how should we view this season? That's kind of been, you know, something that's been bannered around here. Obviously for Kansas, it's about, you know, can they make a good run, a team that didn't win the Big 12. They're a game away from playing in Kansas City in the Sweet 16. Kansas State and Texas Tech both combined and break that streak of Kansas. How should we view this season with the seniors they had coming out, the preseason, all Big 12 guy, a guy like Barry Brown that, you know, should have had consideration for Big 12 Player of the Year, to snap that streak but yet lose in the first round? How should we view this Wildcat basketball team?
I still view it as undoubtedly a success and a successful season to be able to do what they did. You mentioned it, not only just winning a Big 12 title, but the historical significance of being one of the two teams that dethroned Kansas. That's an accomplishment that you can't ever take away from this team. I know the ending stings, and that's kind of just the deal with college basketball. A lot of good teams will have that caveat that, okay, March happened to them, and it didn't end the way that they really wanted it to. But I don't think you can take away at all the accomplishment of this group. I mean, K-State, frankly, in my lifetime, has won two Big 12 championships. It's not something that happens very often at all relative to this program. And so I think they deserve to be held in a pretty high esteem for that. And the grind of an 18-game season to go through it and withstand everything that they did. The team dealt with a ton of adversity this year. And to come through and get some hardware with a Big 12 championship, I think deserves to be remembered above all else. And I hope that's really what time will bear out with this team, that that is what's actually remembered. Because if you're just looking at it historically, for K-State's program, what this group did was very special. I mean, if you're a Kansas fan and you want to scoff at it because you've won 14 straight, that's fine. But if you're a K-State fan and you're being honest about it, what this group accomplished should absolutely be remembered as a successful season.
John, how far are they away from doing this again?
That's the million-dollar question right now. I will tell you, I think they're going to be better next year than most people expect. Xavier Sneed talked a little bit today about his draft prospects, and he basically said he hadn't thought that far as to what he's going to do. I would guess that he'll do what Barry Brown did last year and test the NBA draft waters, put his name out there, get some workouts, and see what the feedback is. I doubt that he would leave, but that is out there as a possibility. But let's assume that he's coming back. If you have him, Cartier Jeanne, who I think is going to be a star for K-State, McCall Maywean, who's played a ton of basketball, Mike McGurl, who's played a lot of basketball, you've got a pretty good core to build around. And K-State is also getting the Chicago Sun-Times Player of the Year next season coming in from high school in Dejuan Gordon. That's some rarefied air when you win that honor. The names, if you go look at the names that have won that award before, it is a prestigious list. So I think he will be a better player than what the recruiting rankings would indicate right now. So I feel like they have a good foundation. I think they will be a tournament team next year. Now, when does that manifest itself into a team with this much veteran leadership that can win a Big 12 championship? That remains to be seen. But when K-State brought in Dean Wade, Barry Brown, and Cam Stokes, there was not a lot of hype and fanfare around that recruiting class either. So Bruce Weber's MO has been good scouts. He can find some talent, you know, looking under some rocks. It's not the most heralded in the world, and find a way to turn it into a good team. He's proven enough to me that he can do this again. I'm not going to sit here and call my shot as to when it will happen, but I do think it can happen again.
Well, and the one thing Bruce Weber's talked about when he joined the show, the success recruiting-wise that parlayed itself from the run they had last year, and then, of course, you know, being co-Big 12 champions. That helps. That helps, you know, get your name recognition. It gets those letters read by recruits. Ready to turn the corner to Chris Klieman in football?
Yeah, you know, we get more spring football access, a lot more, with Chris Klieman. So I know there's some stuff coming up this next week, which is crazy. It's almost overwhelming, and it has been, quite frankly, because we've had all this basketball going on and trying to coordinate that with some football press conferences. We probably haven't given enough attention to K-State football in that regard. But I am looking forward to it. Very positive vibe around that program. It's certainly much more media-friendly right now, much more player-friendly. So there's a lot of good vibes there. I am very much looking forward to spring football.
Well, you know what? We will talk some football, John. John Kurtz, K-Man Program Director from Manhattan out in San Jose, California, for a disappointing Kansas State loss today to UC Irvine. Thanks a lot, John. Let's talk some football soon.
Yeah, anytime, Dave.
All right, my friend. You take it easy. Have a good, safe trip back. And Julio, I think we're due for some scores.
I think we are, sir. Let's get you some updates as we do on the tens a little bit late here, or early, however you want to look at it.
Disappointing news out there, you know, in San Jose.
Yeah, you know how it is. As we do on the tens throughout the NCAA tournament, we try and get you updates when we can. Looks like we got about 3.5 minutes left in the Washington versus Utah State game. Washington up 34-25. North Dakota State currently holds a lead over Duke, 14-11, 11.5 to go in the first half. Georgia State and Houston just kicked off. Houston already putting a whooping on them, 13-3, 15.5 to go in that one. Following that, we have Mississippi State versus Liberty. That tips off at, should be here in just a moment, 6:29. Back to you, Bink.
Oh, those feisty Bison. We talked about them the other night, Julio. Fargo, North Dakota, the feisty Bison. That would be a bracket breaker, but oof. I don't see Duke. That, people talk about bracket breakers. That is a bracket buster, Julio. Coming up next, what's that, Julio?
It's going to end like Virginia. The first half, they'll put up a fight. Second half, the laydown.
Oh, that was embarrassing by Virginia. Completely embarrassing. Coming up next, we talk to my guy, Matt Lane, at Chief in Carolina from ArrowheadPride.com. We still got a lot of Chiefs news to talk about. Been a busy couple weeks for the Kansas City Chiefs. We start zeroing in on the NFL draft. Do things change now in the first round for the Chiefs? We'll talk to Matt Lane next.
Think you know Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense?
You bet your sweet ass.
Stay in your lane. It's the Offensive Outlook with Arrowhead Pride's Matt Lane.
That's right. Even though we're at Harris Casino watching a little March Madness, we just checked in with John Kurtz live in San Jose, where Kansas State falls today to the Anteaters of UC Irvine. Julio Sanchez producing the operation, but pleased to be joined by my good friend at Chief in Carolina from ArrowheadPride.com, part of this great collection of guys that came together to put this draft guide out with Kent Swanson. What's up, Matt?
Oh, I'm doing great, JB. Thanks for the fantastic introduction. I feel like I'm a high roller now after that kind of stuff.
Well, you are a high roller, my friend. The work you do on there is exceptional, as I've always recommended to people, at Chief in Carolina on Twitter. This guy breaks it down just about as well as anybody else. And Matt, before we go, I know I've talked to you about the release of Justin Houston and Eric Berry. What do you think about Houston joining Chris Ballard at Indy? I thought it was funny when they were giving their reports that, well, Chiefs are changing defenses. He went right back to a 4-3 at Indy.
Yeah. No, it's a good move for the Colts. Getting a player like Houston that you don't want to have on the field 80% of the snaps anymore, and even if they paid a pretty penny for him, he's still a very good pass rusher, and that's a team that was desperate for some outside pass rush at this point in time. So it was a great move late in free agency by Ballard, and I think you're starting to see kind of his blueprint for the Colts is going to be not spending big to start free agency, and he's going to kind of look for his kind of guys. Having worked with Houston before, I'm sure he felt plenty comfortable bringing him on board.
Yeah, and he was interested in D Ford as well. Of course, Chris, I haven't seen the latest. It looked like Shane Ray was drawing some interest from Chris Ballard as well. I don't know if they got any of that done today, but I know that Ballard's sitting there with the $102 million kind of waiting in those weeds. I know he was at Ian Rappaport put out 3 hours ago that may not be done adding edge help. Sort say they hosted Shane Ray today after they got Justin Houston, so I don't think anything's been completed on that. But once again, it's Chris Ballard kind of waiting in the weeds and trying to fill some pieces on a defense that actually played pretty well last year.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is the defense well outperformed kind of their general talent level last year. So now he's going to add a few more pieces. They kept most of their in-house guys. They brought most of them back after letting them test free agency. So they're just kind of building for the long haul. I think that's kind of Ballard's plan. I don't think you're ever going to see him spend huge in free agency. Maybe a re-signing here and there, but he seems to be a guy that's more conservative in terms of going out to get big-name players. And he'll just kind of wait at the end. But it's working out great for him so far. They're looking like they're going to be one of the top two or three teams in the AFC going forward for the next decade.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, I think the Colts-Chiefs game this year, I think, is a, kind of a precursor to what's going to happen in the future. A little Luck Mahomes matchups. Luck a few years older than Patrick Mahomes, is still a young quarterback as far as quarterbacks are concerned. The upper echelon, clearly we have to put the Patriots there until Tom and Belichick are gone. Who else do you view as those powers in the AFC besides the Chiefs? I'm looking at Cleveland, and I'm looking at Indy, and I'm looking at former Chiefs front office guys and current Chiefs front office guys kind of running the gamut with Kansas City ties.
Yeah, I think that's where you have to start. You have the Patriots there at the top until somebody dethrones them. But the Colts are looking good, and then you got the Browns, at least for now. The thing with the Browns and Dorsey, he very well could have learned from his time in Kansas City. But if not, there might be kind of a hard cap of 4 or 5 years on the Browns' success, just because eventually they will run out of money if he doesn't learn how to work the cap a little bit better than he did here in Kansas City. And then they'll start to hit this kind of stalling part, or even a little drop-off as they have to get back under the cap. But those are your three teams to challenge the Patriots for the next couple years and then take the reins once the Patriots are done.
All right, Matt, here's the million-dollar question. I talked to Pete about it the other night on the air. I've been discussing this. I have called this defense already better than the 2018 defense. And let me preface this by saying, the Honey Badger, having him out there all the time and not this wait-and-see attitude with Eric Berry. Yes, they're missing some pass rush production, but I just think we're seeing the cusp of how good Chris Jones can be. I'm not expecting greatness from pass rush from Okafor, but a lot of help in setting that edge at defense. But Steve Spagnuolo and this all-star staff he's putting together gives me more hope than sitting last year here on March 22nd thinking about our defense. I don't know where you stand in line. I look at this defense in a more positive light because I know they're not done than what I did last year.
Yeah, and that's where you have to start with is it's not done yet. There's still 5 weeks until the draft. And then after the draft, you still have 3-4 months until real football starting. The defense isn't done. There's a lot of money sitting on the books for the Chiefs. They're not planning on just rolling all that over in the next year. And I know people always want to bring up the extensions for Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill. And if they did even want to go that route, you're spending less than $10 million this year if you want to on extending both those players. There's still so much money out there for the Chiefs if they want to use it that I think Beach is going to on something. But when you look at the moves that they've made so far, I think you have to believe that the team is going to perform better. But if you're sitting there looking at player by player, I could see how you'd be a little worried that the talent level has dipped since last year just by losing both of your best outside pass rushers. The Eric Berry move, he didn't really get on the field last year, so it's definitely an upgrade there. But I can see the worry about the pass rushers until we get a chance to see who they have filling in them for them completely. But it's that scheme and attitude change that you talked about that's going to make the biggest difference.
Matt, let's talk about pass rushers for a second. I've clearly been high on Jalen Ferguson. Now, that did take a turn. Chiefs had dinner with him Sunday. We're going to bring him in for a visit. That pro day, because he didn't compete in the combine because he had that off-the-field incident when he was a freshman at McDonald's back at Tech. That did concern me to where I'm going to go a different direction at 29. Can the Chiefs get a pass rusher moving up value-wise to 20 or 21? That's where kind of Cleveland Farrell is falling into. Or do they make a move to get that pass rush? I know I've heard people talk about Clowney, but I sit here and think, why would the Texans, who won their division, who have a franchise quarterback, try to make another threat in the AFC the Chiefs better?
Yeah, I don't think that Clowney's going to be a big trade target. If he was actively available for a lower price, just like the D-Ford was for the Chiefs, you could see some calls coming in from the Chiefs. But in terms of what his full price would be as if any top-level pass rush is going to be, it's a little too steep, and I'm with you. I don't think Houston is going to be willing to make the Chiefs better by giving them just Davion Clowney on a cheap deal. So you're looking at the draft, and I'm with you. I think early 20s, you're going to get one of these pass rushers going to slide a little bit, whether that's a Montez Sweat. It seems they're a little worried about the heart condition. It doesn't seem to be a big factor at all. If a team is worried about Brian Burns' ability to defend the run with his slight frame, or the most common guy, Cleveland Farrell, who I think fits the new Chiefs defense to a T, that's the guy I'm targeting. But in terms of the low 20s, I think that's your target spot to trade up, about 21, 22. You definitely want to get ahead of the Raiders pick at 24. Even if they take an edge early in the class or draft, that's where you want to get ahead of. So I think there's going to be a good chance the Chiefs can go up there and make that move if they feel like they need a defensive end. And at this point, I don't see how they wouldn't.
Is there a possibility that they move back because they value the second and third round better than they do the first?
I don't think so. I don't think that's kind of Beach's style. He's talked about multiple times about being aggressive, how having this extra cap space and then the draft capital is going to allow them to be aggressive and move around in the draft. I think if you see a bad situation play out to where all the edge players and then whatever cornerback or two they like come off the board super early, you could see them maybe try to slide out of 29, but I don't think that's going to be the plan going into the draft. I think they want to move up. They want to fill a hole at defensive end that they have right now, and Beach has shown that he's probably the most aggressive GM in the entire NFL at this point in time, so I would expect him to.
Matt, where do you sit with pick 29 as we sit right now? They pick there, they trade up. Who do you want? Who do you want?
Cleveland Farrell's kind of my guy right now. I'm from Carolina. It's the Twitter handle at Chief in Carolina. We're out here right now. He plays what's close enough to my home right now at Clemson. Watched a ton of Clemson games, and I just like everything about him, from the way he carries himself off the field, every interview I've heard. And then people can sleep on his game a little bit just because he's not the most athletic player. But the power and his hand technique is top-notch. He would fit in perfectly in Spagnuolo's defense with the length, the size. He's kind of my guy right now, and I'm just not sure why the NFL's seemingly dropped on him since last year when they thought he was coming out and they slated him as an early first-round pick. and now all of a sudden he's a late first-round pick. I don't know where the change came in, but I'm okay with it as a Chiefs fan drafting late in the draft.
Good stuff. At Chief and Caroline on Twitter, it's Matt Lane at arrowheadpride.com. Check out his fine work there. Plenty of draft talk coming up. Thanks for taking the time on this Friday night during March Madness to join me, Matt.
Oh, thanks for having me on, JB. And everybody, we talked about the KC draft guide coming out. If you slide on over to that Twitter,
oh, yeah,
in Carolina, you can see a preview, the very first preview of what it's going to look like. We got a whole prospect profile up there right now with a link to the draft guide. It's only $6.99 if you're getting it before we release here in April. But you'll get to see what it looks like, how we talk about the fits for the Chiefs, and everything you're going to be getting right there in one page. So check it out, guys. Head on over, buy one before the price goes back up. It's time to release it.
Well, you know what? Kent gave one free away the other night for the first person that used the code word Ferguson, because I wanted to have a final salute to Jalen Ferguson.
Yeah, that's, we had to pour a big one out for you that night, seeing that 8-second three cone and that incredibly high shuttle come out. I felt bad for you because his testimony wasn't terrible.
I took some heat, my man. But you know what? I'm willing to go back to mock school after seeing those pro day numbers, all right? Back to mock school.
All right, sounds good, JB.
All right, Matt Lane. Take care, my man. There you go, Matt Lane, Arrowhead Pride. Julio, let's sneak in some scores.
Let's do it. As we do throughout the at least the first couple rounds of the tournament, every on the tens here, get you an update on the scores. Looks like Washington is giving Utah State the business. At halftime, Washington up 40-28. North Dakota State has now fall behind Duke. Surprise, surprise. 20-16. 5 minutes to go in the first half. Georgia State down to Houston, 21-10. About 11 left in the first half. And Liberty, Mississippi State just kicked off. Mississippi State up 7-2. About 15 and a half left in that one as well. Back to you,
Jack. That's one of the upsets I had. Julio, I had Liberty winning that one.
Yeah, you might be SOL. We'll see.
You know what? You got to take some chances, Julio. You got to take some chances.
Certainly do.
You got to take a few chances in the NCAA tournament. You got to go big or go home, you know? Get a dog, Julio. Scared, get a dog. Coming up next, we're live at Winning Streaks here at Harrah's Casino. Great spot to sit down, relax, and to watch the games in a leather recliner and get served beer just sitting right there at your seat. You want to eat one of these great hangover burger sandwiches. We're having a great time out here. A lot of the 610 crew out here as well. So hope to see you at Harrah's at Winning Streaks. Register for free opening day tickets in our box that we have right here at our table inside Winning Streaks at Harrah's. Coming up next, I want to address something John Kurtz said a minute ago about Kansas State being a success or disappointment. We do that next. And welcome back to Bink at Night. Jay Binkley live at Winning Streaks, Harrah's North Kansas City Casino, and of course Julio Sanchez producing the operation. Tons of 610 people here. We have a lot of specials here. The Basketball Madness, Hangover Burger, Caramelized Onions, Bacon, Fried Egg, Queso Cheese, Choice of Side, Fried Chicken Sandwich, and Bacon Wrapped Jalapenos, Julio.
Making me hungry, babe.
If that doesn't excite you, with that great beer selection as well. At 7:30, we'll talk to Sierra from here at Winning Streaks to talk about their beer. A lot of people, you know, don't think of going to the casino and having a great selection of craft beer from around the local region and across the country, but they have it here, and they have a lot of basketball on tap to watch as well. Going back to what John Kurtz said, you know, seeing this kind of as a success for Kansas State, I guess in a way, if that's the way you want to look at it, I just can't look at it that way, Julio. I mean, I look at this team and I look at how the Big 12 is doing in the tournament. When your co-Big 12 champion loses in the first round, I know what kind of heat Kansas gets whenever they would lose in the first round. Kansas State, the 4 seed, loses to the 13 seed. But that loss of Dean Wade was huge for Kansas State. For Kansas State to make any kind of run whatsoever, Julio, they had to have Dean Wade. Well, and I know they didn't have him last year during that run, but this team needed the presence of the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. And not to have the guy that carried the team this year, Barry Brown, end up with 5 points tonight.
Yeah, I think that's really what hurt them. I mean, look, all teams go through adversity, whether it's injuries, suspensions, whatever the case may be. So I don't think that's a valid excuse, especially with what they were able to do last year without him. That being said,
the mentality, doesn't the mentality that, you know, that he gave us as far as it being a successful season, that kind of tells you where their program is at as compared to someone like a KU tier one type program. I mean, they're on different levels. So our success as KU versus where K-State is, they're two completely different things. And I think people need to understand that.
Well, the one thing, too, I thought about Kansas, you know, typically they don't care about the Big 12 tournament. I thought they did this year. You know, they needed some kind of, you know, validation for not winning the regular season. And, you know, putting together a good run in the NCAA tournament with a group of guys that a lot of Kansas fans just haven't acclimated to, haven't gotten behind this Kansas team. This is one of the few Kansas teams, Julio, that people just don't have that connection to players. I mean, Devin Dodson getting that to a certain extent, but they don't have, you know, the guys to rally around, the Perry Ellis's and the Frank Masons and, you know, guys to carry this basketball team to new heights. That they just haven't had this, and it's just kind of a different Kansas team to watch. But when you go out and win by 35 points or 34 points in the first round, then a very winnable game against Auburn. Auburn was a team that came in red hot as they win the SEC tournament with a nice victory, a 20-point victory over Tennessee, rattling off about nine straight wins for Auburn coming into this. They struggle against New Mexico State in the first round, and I don't know if that was a case of being overconfident or if Auburn can find who they were and give Kansas a challenge in that game.
Yeah, that's what kind of scares me is they did play so bad. I think they'll come with their A game when they play Kansas. But as far as, you know, people not being able to really necessarily relate to Kansas players right now, look, they did at the beginning of the season have those players, right, with Doak, you know, possibly with Silvio, you know, with the way he played in the tournament last year.
Yeah, you talk about a team that took some hits.
Right. So, they had those players. It's just they've had to shuffle, you know, the lineup around so much. It's hard to find. And the players are so young and inconsistent. It's hard for people to kind of buy into them, not just because of them playing, you know, inconsistently individually, but as a team throughout the year, ups and downs. So it's hard for people to buy in because of that.
You know, I know people look at Kansas and Kansas fans especially, and if they don't make the Final Four, they don't consider the season a success. I think this is a different team. This team makes it to Kansas City, Julio. There is no other way to look at Kansas as one of Bill Self. If Bill Self can get this team to make a run in the NCAA tournament, might be one of his better coaching jobs that he's ever had, considering the losses they've had, the disappointments they've had, that feeling of not being able to come back and win games. If they make any kind of run whatsoever, this is keep in mind, we're putting the cart before the horse here. They got to win. They got to beat Auburn. But if he does it, he has a chance to really kind of, you know, cement himself as coaching one of his better years if he's able to do it.
Well, let me just say this. I feel like we say that far too often with Bill Self about certain teams being his best coaching job. But this, I really feel, does fit that mold because it – Like we just talked about, they've gone through a lot of adversity this year. I don't know, though. One good thing I can say about it is they are playing right now like they have no pressure on them because they don't. And that's why I think they'll, you know, against Auburn, I think they'll show up. I think there's no pressure on them, so there's no reason for them not to. So why I don't think you can stick a pin in Bill Self's cap, you know, as far as what they do in this tournament. You can say, I think if you make it to the Sweet 16, I would consider the season successful for Kansas.
Yeah, and I get that. That's a good point you made about no pressure. Kansas always has pressure on themselves in the NCAA tournament, and this a different deal. They're a 4 seed. You know, no pressure is there. They didn't win the Big 12 regular season this year. Everybody's thought this team is down. They were, 6-point favorites where they ended up winning by 34 points. That's a big thing. That's a thing that we haven't seen from this Kansas team in a long time. A team that did not win its conference championship, kind of carrying the flag, carrying the mantle for the Big 12 conference and not having that pressure, that could change the mindset and things. That's kind of one of the under-talked about things, I think, when it comes to the Kansas Jayhawks.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Coming up next, we put a bow on the Kansas City Royals preseason spring training. Just a couple more games left before opening day, less than a week away, coming up from Kauffman Stadium, which, by the way, on Tuesday on Show and Vern, 17 pairs of tickets 34 tickets overall. They will give away every 15 minutes on Show and Vern, and that's going to be a fantastic time. Plus, if you come out here to Winning Streaks, we have a drawing right here for opening day tickets. So you're looking for some opening day tickets, come down to Harris Casino, gamble a little bit, have a few beers, have a hangover burger, sit and watch some NCAA tournament games with us, and register for some Royals opening day tickets. What do you have to lose? That's my question. We talked to Cody Tapp from Surprise, Arizona. They play the San Francisco Giants live on 610 Sports Radio coming up tonight at 8. Talk to Cody next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.